Welcome to the latest edition of the Ask Qubit About Analytics podcast, brought to you by Qubit, the trusted experts in analytics. Our goal is to cut through the jargon and hype around analytics and data science and share practical advice to guide you on your analytics journey. You can find us at qubit.com, that's Q-U-E-B-I-T.com. Thank you for joining me today. I'm A.G. Tan.
In any business over a certain size, maybe even a business as few as 50 people, it can be difficult to find the right balance of structure and empowerment, control, and freedom. If you have too much structure and control, you stifle every opportunity for people to excel. If you have too much empowerment and freedom, you can quickly become inefficient and wasteful. It also makes it much harder to measure and understand the business, which are important prerequisites to better decision making. If your business operates globally across time zones, currencies, cultures, and markets, it becomes even harder to find the right balance. It's natural and probably best to cede more control to local managers who understand their business environments and customers, but it's dangerous to let things go completely unchecked. This week, we're going to talk about some of these issues through the lens of business analytics at a well-known global brand. It's a fascinating story. So my guest today is Dan Vitteris, who is a master consultant at Qubit and one of our distinguished experts. Dan is one of the guys who gets pulled into our most challenging and complex projects. It doesn't matter whether it's technically convoluted or a business model with twists and turns. Dan uses his big brain and diligence to get things under control. Welcome, Dan. Thank you for joining me today.
Hi, AG. Thank you for having me on.
Dan, let's start by telling our listeners something about the business this global company is in, and at a high level, what some of their analytics-related challenges are. For example, what business goals did they have that they struggled to achieve?
So this brand is a major cosmetics fashion brand that operates globally. They're headquartered in Europe, but they have markets all over the world. Some of their largest markets are in Asia, where most of their sales are, but they're also all over Europe, the UK, United States, South America, everywhere. So a part of their challenges are unifying all of those markets into one, you know, consolidated reporting for the headquarters in Europe. Getting all those different teams to report using the same methodologies, come up with their forecasts using the same methodologies, and be on the same ERP has really been a struggle for them, because every market's different, there are language barriers, every market operates differently. So the goal of this company really was to unify all of their business practices under one consolidated hood.
That sounds like a really quite the challenge. You know, I guess I would wonder how they even got into that state. But what about this situation did you personally find especially interesting? Because I know you told me that you did.
Yeah, so what was interesting about it was this company started building a planning reporting model in Asia. It wasn't intended to be a model that was going to work everywhere, but just for Asia. They built it out. It worked great for them. They got the reporting they needed. They were able to run the allocations that gave them the results they wanted, and it was all working great. And then a global team within this company decided, hey, this model we built in Asia works so well, I bet it can work all over the world. So they took this model, they applied it to some smaller markets that they had, Canada, some markets in South America, and those implementations went great for them. They were able to get their actual reporting, all their forecasting worked as needed, and the teams there were amenable to the changes. They were okay with taking on this new methodology and applying it. Where the challenge really came, was with Europe, which is a whole different animal. It's one of their largest markets. It's where they're headquartered. And trying to apply this model that worked everywhere else so well from Asia onto Europe was met with tons of challenges that I don't think they expected.
Oh, that's so interesting. So to help us picture it, do you have any specific examples you can share about, you know, specifically what these challenges look like and how they came about? You know, was it because of different reporting requirements, or was it for other reasons?
Yeah, I really, so every market in Europe, every country is its own separate market that sort of operates independently and reports up to the headquarters in Europe. And really every country has to operate differently because of certain regulations. For example, in Russia, there's a lot of, different sort of tariffs on them and things they have to deal with internationally when they're selling that other countries like Italy may not have to deal with. So every country has its own kind of unique specificities that make their business a little more difficult or strange. And really it comes down to how they plan, what level they plan at. Is it at the market level? Do they plan at the individual boutique, like the individual store where things are being sold? The level of planning across all these countries is very different. And because of that, level of allocation specifically was very different. What methodology they should use to allocate things down to these boutiques, all these different factors that they actually care, some countries care about to do their planning, some countries do not care about. And the big issue was with this global model that came from Asia, there was kind of one way to do these allocations and do this planning. And the countries were kind of told, this is how it's going to be. Here's your new global model that we need you to follow to meet the standards of our global reporting. And a lot of these countries couldn't live with it. Could not change their business to say, oh, okay, we're doing it this way now. Basically, they had someone from on top saying, this is how you do your job now. And the people in the countries were saying, that's not how we do our job. That's just not going to work. So there was a lot of conflict there with this team coming in and telling Europe how they should do their job. And it was made only more complex by every country having their own complexities. So many, many conflicts all at once with every European country.
So it sounds like a mismatch of, technical challenges combined with cultural issues. Is that fair to say?
Yes. Yeah, one of the big technical challenges was these countries were so used to having their actuals imported in via file. It was very simple, right? Mm-hmm. So they get their data and their actuals, and I think they probably do some manipulation, right, to get it in the way they needed it, and they'd upload it into their system. With the new system, they wanted everyone on the same chart of accounts, so that way the allocations would flow from there and work the same for everyone. But getting that technology up and running to do these loads of actuals in every country was sometimes technically challenging. They didn't have the infrastructure to support that and get that ERP set up. And sometimes it was just from a business standpoint, very challenging. They didn't have the proper data they needed to do the allocation at the level they used to do it. So it was a clash of both things, and every country had their own specificities of why it wasn't working.
I mean, so you're basically saying that they didn't even have a standardized accounting system, right? The ERP, the Enterprise Resource Planning System, usually includes the general ledger. Are you saying that they didn't even have a standardized general ledger and general chart of accounts that they all worked to?
No, they did not. And that was one of the big problems going in, is they really needed that, right? Really, step one before you even implement anything was to get the entire globe, if you're doing a global implementation, to agree on a standard chart of accounts. And they could not make that happen. No one really took responsibility for saying, this is what it is, do you agree? Nothing was documented, nothing was signed off. It was kind of forced upon the countries, and when the countries saw it, there was no discussion there. There was no documentation or mediation to get things to a point that worked for everyone. So yeah, it was never agreed upon, a standard chart of accounts.
Wow. I mean, one would think that it would be possible to do this by simply taking the union of all the accounts that everyone needed, right? And maybe do a little bit of cleanup and a little bit of compromise on what some of them might be called. And just, that way everybody's needs would be covered, right?
Yeah, you think that, but I think the mindset going in was, oh, we implemented this chart of accounts in Asia and that worked. Why not just everyone else take this as well? I don't think there was as much listening as opposed to, here's what you're going to use now.
Right. Well, that definitely sounds like a place where some leadership could be useful. So Dan, this has been a pretty good build-up, and the more you have spoken, the more overwhelming the challenge sounds. I'm hoping there is some sort of light here. So maybe you can tell us, you know, you went in as part of a consulting team from Qubit. What did Qubit recommend to them?
Yeah, so what had happened was they were going along with this European implementation from the global model into Europe and weren't making any progress. They couldn't get anyone to agree on what was needed. Testing was getting delayed and delayed and delayed. And finally, they put a stop to the Europe implementation and said, we need to pause. We need to figure out what's going wrong with this implementation and take a step back and prepare ourselves for when we're ready to start this back up again. What do we need to do differently next time? So Qubit was contacted to come in and basically perform an audit of the process of this implementation in Europe. And that essentially involved interviewing all of the key people involved from the global team who's doing the implementation, the corporate finance team in Europe, and also all of the various finance teams across Europe that were having this, were a part of this implementation. So really Qubit came in and we listened to everyone, heard what went wrong, and then we provided back to the client, here are our recommendations. You know, this isn't going to be easy, right? There's a lot of complications to this implementation, but here are what we would recommend you do if you were to restart this project to get it on a better footing going forward.
So what's the first thing you recommended?
So really what the most glaring thing was, at the very start of their project, they went around to each country and they listened to each country's specific requirements, so where they deviated from the global model, whether it was a chart of accounts or allocation methodology. And they went around, listened to all those countries and took some notes. And we thought that was great, right? It was very important right at the start of a project to go around and gather all of your requirements. Where they failed was there was nothing ever formally written down or distributed after those meetings. No one ever formally documented what came out of those meetings. No one ever formally documented requirements or a design plan for the project. Nothing was ever distributed to the countries for them to sign off or give feedback. And so the countries had those initial meetings. The developers went away, the global team, to build out this model for them. Then at the end, when they were showed what the countries received, they all went, hey, that's not what we talked about. We said we needed this. And there was nothing to point back to, no documentation to say, we agreed to this, this is our requirement. It was all kind of lost. So it was kind of, he said, she said at the end of the day, what actually did we agree to? And no one could point to anything. And that really, at the end, blew everything up because no one knew what they're actually building to.
Wow. So if they had documented it, they would potentially have been in a stronger position to push some of the changes through, right? Because they would have been able to point to it, but because they didn't document it, they ended up in a situation where it just kept going around in circles and they could never kind of find a fixed point, if you will, or lay a foundation from which they could then move forward, right?
Yeah, it was almost impossible to test for the users because they didn't even know what they were testing to. They thought they were testing to the requirements they provided months ago, but what they were given was kind of something different and no one actually knew what was being built to or what was had been built. There was no goal that everyone had agreed on. And really that, we thought that was foundational, that all had to be laid out before one hand touches the keyboard, right? The country's got to agree and everyone's got to know what they're building to.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of those things that's very easy to see when in, you know, 2020 hindsight, or when you come in from outside and have these conversations. It's not always easy to see when you're in the middle of it and you're trying to please everybody. But one thing I know myself from being a consultant is that sometimes even if you have that meeting to gather requirements, and even if you document it, when you send that document back to the customer, most of the time, they'll still find stuff that they don't think was what they said, right? So it's a great document, you know, that kind of requirements documentation can be a very good communication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just lays it all out for everyone to see and agree to, and it sparks those discussions, right, that you wouldn't have had if you just started building. It's important to really get that stuff ironed out and talk it out before you are too far down the road.
Yeah. No, that's great. So, you know, I usually like to wrap up, you know, these podcasts with some kind of, you know, lesson or tips and tricks. So is there anything you learned from this experience that you could, you know, generalize as advice, things to do, things to avoid, for a, you know, global company maybe facing a similar situation where they have a very distributed group of people around the world, perhaps, and they're trying to get, you know, solve some kind of analytics and data problem, which is what global planning or financial planning is, and they're trying, you know, struggling to get it underway.
Yeah, I guess this isn't a tip necessarily, but I think it's crucial to foster a sense of a team. I think where this project really went wrong was the global team came in and they were from Asia, and there was the corporate finance team and they're in Europe, and they were basically factioned off, right? They didn't really communicate much in their day-to-day jobs, and they kind of felt like opposing forces, right? They instead of working together, it was like a battle. And it didn't help much that, you know, the global team who was actually building the solution for the finance team was in different time zones, had a language barrier. It may have made some of those things difficult. They just were opposed from each other from the start. So I think it was important. I think later on in the project, they actually, the global team moved to the same time zone as the finance team. And that was important, right? It just for availability and knowledge transfer and feeling like they're working out together, as opposed to some person who's only working on this when you're sleeping, right? It just is fostering that sense of a team is crucial and would be crucial for them to move forward, because the way they are now separated never will lead to a solution that'll make everyone happy.
Right. So ultimately, you know, it sounds like you and the rest of the Qubit team were kind of like therapists.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, there's a lot of frustration vented to us. Pretty much no one was happy. A lot of finger pointing. But yeah, really what it came down to is they need to lay out what they need to do, clearly document it, have some people who take charge of the situation, who, you know, when something's missing a deadline, when something is not matching a requirement, will point it out and get a meeting on the calendar to talk it out. There needs to be accountability, and they need to come together as a team to work towards one goal. That's really what it came down to.
And build trust, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Trust that they're hearing each other, I think was the key, right?
Yeah.
The Europe team felt the global team wasn't hearing them because they felt the global team already had the requirements.
Right.
And weren't actually listening to the new requirements that Europe really needed. They felt there was a wall up that they couldn't break down.
Right. Now that's so interesting. Isn't it funny how ostensibly people might think this was a technology problem, but it really sounds much more like a people problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, yeah, 100% was. I think corralling all the global stakeholders and getting everyone in the room, that alone was hard. And then implementing something to make everyone happy was even harder. So it truly is, in the day, was getting everyone on the same page is the hardest thing.
Yep. No, that was great. Thank you. Thank you, Dan.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening. We would love to hear from you. Do you have anything you would like to ask Qubit about analytics? You can tweet us at AskQubit or email us at info@qubit.com. That's info@QUEBIT.com. Until next time.